There was a point in my life where everyone liked me. And now, y'all motherfuckers like me. Ha ha, fuck you. Yeah, dog, all up in your motherfucking player face. Yeah, dog. Pete. Yeah, dog.
Time for The Tainted Glove, starring your favorite man of questionable character, Aloha Mr. Hand.
Hey bud, let's party!
And the Holy Reverend K-Fids himself. It's go time, so grab a beer, grab a bite, and settle in. It's time for The Tainted Glove.
Aloha, and welcome to the July 25th 2022 version of The Tainted Glove. I am one of your co-hosts, the man of notorious questionable character, Aloha Mr. Hand. And with me as always is my partner, my friend, my compadre, the Honorable Reverend K-Fids, who I will probably need to give confession to in a couple weeks because I'm sure I'll be doing some very bad things once the trade deadline passes us. But want to say happy heavenly birthday to Walter Payton, who would be celebrating his 69th birthday today if he was with us, and RIP to Paulie Cicero, a.k.a. Paul Sorvino, and, of course, the father of Mira Sorvino. Hubba hubba. And with that, K-Fids, take it away.
Yeah, no joke. It's been a pretty rough couple weeks for the Goodfellas family.
Yes. Very much so.
The Grim Reaper's been doing some whacking,
and I heard this on the score today, and I think Layla Rahimi put it perfectly. Put Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci in bubble wrap.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, but thanks for tuning in, Face. Thanks for tuning in. We're glad you guys are taking the time to kind of join us for this week again. Plenty of stuff coming down the line today. We're going to talk, obviously, about the Major League Draft and how the Cubs and the Sox did or didn't do, what our thoughts are and where they're at, and how they will either improve or not improve, I guess, the Cubs and the Sox. We've got some Bears stuff coming down the line. Obviously, we're talking about the second half of the season, make some predictions, talk about the trade deadline, obviously, in Major League Baseball with the Cubs and Sox. Then we're going to jump to a little bit of Bear stuff. We're getting there. The temperatures are starting to shift. It's actually only 89 degrees here in Vegas right now. I mean, it's raining, but still, which means teams are reporting to camp now. It's that time of year. So we'll talk a little bit of Bear stuff. Some stuff came down today about some possible schematics for a Soldier Field renovation that doesn't include a giant alien ship landing on top of it. And then we'll jump from the Bear stuff on to some entertainment. And Pete got a chance to see Facing Nolan, a really great Nolan Ryan documentary that came out a bit ago. And I got to see Nope yesterday. And then we're going to talk a little bit about live music. I had a live music weekend where I got to go see The Shins on Friday, another buddy's band on Saturday night that I hadn't seen in since 2009. And then last night, I got to cap off a three-day weekend or a three-weekend concert extravaganza by checking out the Lumineers. So we'll talk a little bit about those. Not too much on it, but great experiences. So we'll get that. Obviously, probably a much, much more as we talk. You know, things kind of come up. So with that, let's jump right to it, man. Major League Draft finally, you know, came down. We've got ourselves some, you know, we had some predictions in here, what we thought maybe the Cubs would do and the White Sox would do. And, you know, my guy, the guy that I really wanted for the Cubs, was there again the second year in a row, and the Cubs passed on the guy for the second year in a row. So it was a little bit of a weird thing, but actually, we got some pretty interesting stuff to talk about when it comes to the White Sox and the Cubs, because I actually am not super, I'm not super disappointed, to be honest, with the Cubs. So I guess let's jump into the White Sox first. I mean, I always jump in the Cubs because I'm the guy that's talking a lot, but let me pull up the White Sox real quick and we'll talk a bit about some of their projects
I think you said the key word. And that's been my frustration with the White Sox, with the White Sox draft. This is not a knock against who they drafted. It is a knock against their approach, for lack of a better way to put it. In the first round, they drafted, and I hope I say this right, Noah Schultz.
Correct.
A left-handed pitcher from Oswego East High School, right here in Illinois. Now he has signed for $2.8 million. That was his signing bonus, with the slot value being $2,789,400. So just slightly above slot, slightly above. Now, this pick bothers me. And again, it is not a slight on his ability. You know, there's been comps to Chris Sale. There's been comps to Randy Johnson because he's a six, was he 6 foot nine, six, something like that. Left-hander. Slow your roll on that, okay? Slow your roll first. Second, this is the White Sox. What's the sense of being the White Sox if you can't White Sox something?
Right.
Because you drafted a project in the first round. I'm sorry. Projects are not for the first round. Most first round, if you get a bullpen arm for a pitcher, if you get a bullpen arm out of the first round, let alone a starter, you're doing good. Mm-hmm. Position player, if you get a everyday starter, you're doing great. If you get a bench role type player, you're still doing good out of the first round. You don't draft a project in the first round.
Correct.
You don't.
It's not a-
you just don't. This makes no fucking sense. It is, again, the White Sox doing White Sox things, you know, and who was the best player available out there? The one that you wanted, Cam Collier, was gone before he got to the White Sox. Didn't the Reds take him, I believe?
Yes, Reds, I think like 13th or 14th or 15th, somewhere in there. I can pull that up.
Yeah, in the teens someplace, I want to say. And the White Sox were 26th. So, again, and to me, this draft for both the Cubs and the Sox sends the same message. In my opinion, it sends the same message for both teams. Forget about going after free agent pitching. They don't want to pay the price for a free agent pitcher. So they're trying to go bulk with pitching and hope that something sticks. That applies to both teams because the Sox drafted Noah Schultz in the first round, left-handed pitcher, like I said. In the second round, it was Peyton Pelay. I hope I said that right. A right-handed pitcher out of Arkansas, a.k.a. Arkansas. And the slot value for that is basically probably $1.16 million when you round up and everything like that. Has not signed yet. Third round for the White Sox, Jonathan Cannon, a right-handed pitcher out of Georgia, with a slot value of $606,600. Again, has not signed yet. And the important thing to remember about drafting, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is the way I understand it. The important thing to remember about drafting is if you don't sign one of those players, you lose more money than just that slot value carries. That you can't like draft someone in the second round, not sign them, and go and spread that $606,000 the third round, I should say, and spread that $606,000 across other people. You basically lose that because wasn't that the situation that happened a couple years ago with a player with Houston, I believe it was, with Appel.
Mm-hmm.
When he didn't sign.
It's kind of like the gold standard of it.
Right, exactly. When he didn't sign because of injuries or because the medical records and they haggled about money. Other players were affected that couldn't sign because that money was not available. It has a ripple effect. So you have to be mindful of that too. But this is the White Sox strategy every year. Pitching, 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 pitching. Okay. Now, I hope they're not falling into a new refrain of cats can coach them up, much like Coop can coach them up. I hope they're not falling into that. I question their draft strategy. It makes no sense to me. I know other people have raved about it. It's great, but I'm sorry. You took a project in the first round. You took a project in the first round, an admitted project in the first round. First round picks are not for projects. It is. I can understand taking a high school guy in the first round if he's not a project. I'm sorry. I cut you off. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I mean, yeah, project. I wouldn't slate this as a full-on project, though. I mean, the kid does, I mean, again, and we actually talked about this with Tanner McDougal on the Pinwheels and Ivy a couple weeks ago. He is a guy that comes out of the Perfect Game group. A lot of his stuff, a lot of the numbers that you're reading come from Perfect Game. Now, it's obviously from the organizations that are not going, oh, what does Perfect Game say? They're doing their own research and, you know, they got their own radar guns. But
Perfect Game is a component, not the component.
No, and Perfect Game has a notorious record of having broken radar guns. So if Perfect Game says you throw 96, I always have a policy of taking it down 3 miles an hour because they had a guy. I had a guy Perfect Game set through 90, you know, through 91 on my team. The kid never touched 80. So in 2 years, I coached the kid. I'm like, where the hell is this 91 miles an hour that you guys setting through? Because he's throwing 78. And that's on a high fastball. So Perfect Game sometimes is a pay for play kind of thing. But with that said, he is 6'9". He does throw most likely mid to lower 90s at this point. He also has a huge frame. That big frame is like stepping on your toes. He's a local kid. He's got really weird hair. He kind of looks like Sideshow Bob. I won't lie. But he was going to Vanderbilt. I mean, Vanderbilt is a powerhouse when it comes to college baseball. So it's not like he was going somewhere. Like he was just kind of an underrated thing, but he did pitch for the Illinois Valley Pistol Shrimps when he was he missed a lot of his senior year because of mono, if you didn't know that.
Yeah.
So he didn't pitch much his senior year, but when he posted for that Illinois Valley Pistol Shrimps in the prospect league, I think if this is the same league I'm thinking of, I played for the Wheaton White Sox in that prospect league back even when I was in college, and it was a pretty good competitive league, and so, you know, he was pretty good there. I mean, yeah, maybe his ERA is a little bit high. It's only 0.93. Mine was lower in that same league, but whatever. No, just kidding. But he has some pretty good. He was ranked as high as 23rd overall, but he was ranked 49th overall by MLB Pipeline. Now, MLB Pipeline, I don't take the MLB rankings much either because they're basically not the superstars. The real draft experts don't work for MLB Pipeline. They're not.
The real draft experts are with teams drafting people.
True. I don't like him sometimes, but Keith Law knows what he's talking about. I do put a lot of value in the Keith Law prospect looking. And with Law, I think he agrees with you that he was a little bit of a stretch for the White Sox that position. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't look at it as a project, but you can see that there is the White Sox know that he's not someone that's going to be ready with the big club for a while.
Right. That's correct.
And so maybe he's projecting to be a younger Crochet that with better health, because if mono is the only problem that he had, can think of a lot of million things that were worse. I had mono my junior year. It was horrible. By the time I was over, I dropped like 30 pounds. I couldn't even afford to lose. And I look like a broomstick with arms. So he's a 220, 6'9", 220 guy. And I'm sure that dropped while he was with mono. So he probably has put on a little bit more weight than since then. But I don't know. It goes back and forth with whatever or not he's going to be a project, or if this is a kid that they're like, this guy's going to be a dude faster, sooner than later. But I wouldn't call it a full on project, but I would say that it has that stench of project and a long time for them to develop. If the White Sox organization can, of course, develop the talent in their system.
And that's, to me, that's the other part of this. That's the other component of this, because you drafted a project. I don't think the White Sox farm system has the ability to coach up a project.
That's a genuine concern. We've seen it now. We've seen some of these guys come up with some poor fundamentals and guys that don't know where they're supposed to be. I do worry about his size as well, being because he's so long and lanky. How athletic is he going to be on the bump? Can someone drop a bunt down the first baseline while he's falling towards the third baseline and basically get themselves an easy hit?
I mean, that's a fair point, but also he's 6'9". There's a lot of moving parts. And the more moving parts you have, the easier it is to get out of whack.
Yeah. Very true. I mean, I'm watching his footage. I mean, he looks like a broomstick with arms himself too. He's just so tall though. The ball doesn't look like it jumps out of his hand yet, but, I don't know. I'm watching the footage here. I mean, here he is throwing in the Perfect Game, East-West Game, All-American Classic or whatever, in San Diego. It used to be the Aflac All-American Game. And there's a 92-mile-an-hour fastball that he blew by a high school kid. So I do dig that he wears number 9. I'm always a big fan of that. Both the Cubs and the White Sox drafted dudes in the first round that both rocked the number 9. As a number 9er myself, I'm okay with that. But
well, number 9's retired for the White Sox. Yeah. He just went into Hall of Fame yesterday.
It's true. Now, for you, the one guy right now, and I'm looking at it with the White Sox, at least based on what I'm looking at the MLB signing tracker, they signed Schultz.
Yes.
But they have not signed Peyton Paulette. They have not signed Jonathan Cannon, Jordan Sprinkle, Tyler Schweitzer, Eric Adler, Mark McLaughlin, Mario Camilletti. I mean, I'm looking at the White Sox haven't signed anybody.
Just the one.
Just their first overall pick.
Yes.
So that's a dangerous, you know. I mean, Peyton Paulette, they look like they also drafted some guys that really, like, when you draft a senior, and I think, I want to say Peyton Paulette was a senior. He's a four-year junior. So we got a lot of four-year juniors right down the list. So they drafted a bunch of mature guys, too. So that's a good thing. But you're going to have to, you know, keep those guys from going back their senior year, which generally those guys are probably going to take the money. But
I would think they take the money.
I'm looking at a lot of 4 years. I mean, there's, let's see here, one high schooler. That's it. They drafted one high schooler, one high schooler only. Their first overall pick, four-year junior, four-year junior, four-year junior. One, two, three, six. I mean, my God. There's a fifth-year senior, a fifth-year senior, a fifth-year senior, four-year junior. Oh, no, it's not a senior. It's a five. What is that? Four-year 5S? I don't know what that means. Does that mean sophomore? Is he like a four-year sophomore, maybe?
Sophomore? Yeah, maybe a sophomore. Yeah,
a guy that had an injury waiver or something like that, and then a COVID waiver probably, because these guys, a lot of these guys got COVID waivers too, where they could come back for one more year of eligibility because they lost their COVID season. So they were given that option. So that's, what, again, why you're getting some of these older. But those guys will genuinely sign for under slot too. I hate to admit that, but they are desperate, because if they don't sign, what the hell are you going to do?
Right. They're going to have to go out in the real world and get a job. This way they can at least keep the dream alive a little bit longer.
They're not ready to sell used cars yet. So
right, exactly.
They're going to take the money. And one of our guys, insurance. Ryan Pineda, got hosed. He was a senior from Cal State Northridge. And I think the Athletics offered him like $1,000. I'm like, he was like a 15th to 18th round pick, and they offered him $1,000. Because they're like, what are you going to do? You can't go back to school. You're done. Yeah. You just burned your eligibility. You're done. So you're going to go play independent league, or you're going to take the money? I had to take the money. He was from, he played pretty well. He did all right, but he eventually hung it up because the finances were just not working, and he wasn't moving forward. So it was time to hang it up. But it's a tough thing, you know, these signing bonuses. So what do you? So the Peyton Paulette kid, that's another 6'1", 180 guy. Have you dug into him? What are your thoughts on that kid? He's a 6'1", 180, right hander, and what are you hearing?
Yeah, my understanding is that, I've done a little research, but most of it is like taking into account what I've heard from others. You know, your Jim Callises of the world and Keith Laws and all that. But it sounds like Peyton Paulette was a guy who they projected to go a little bit higher, maybe in the 40s or the 50s, and he fell to 62. And, you know, there might have been some, I think, if I remember correctly, there was some Tommy John there that he had. You know, and he's not fully back yet, if you will. So I don't know. I might be confusing him with someone else, but that's what I seem to remember. And it just, but again, it's the White Sox doing White Sox things. You know, the funny thing, and you and I have talked about this, I think it was you and I who talked about this offline. The Cubs and Sox both go pitching heavy in a draft that's not pitching centric. Next year is the draft you want to go pitching heavy with, because next year is looking to be very pitching centric.
Sure.
So next year, you know, and my fear is that you spent a lot of draft capital this year on pitching. Okay, fine, I get it. It's a commodity, you need to have it. Next year, if you do the same thing, you're bleeding your system, because you're not putting position players in there as well. And this is part of the White Sox approach, and the White Sox being the White Sox. They're so afraid of the cost of pitching that they spend 90% of their draft capital on pitching, and then have to go out and get position players for everything else, because they draft some, not enough. And then they don't develop what they draft. You know, it's their scouting and everything else, to me, is ass backwards. They just, I don't understand what they're doing. I do understand what they're afraid to pay for pitching. That's what they're doing.
I mean, it sounds like it. I mean, and again, and this is the crazy part is they've done all this stuff and they made all these, you know, these picks. I mean, they went pitcher, 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 shortstop, mm-hmm. pitcher, 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 second baseman, catcher,
pitcher, pitcher. Yeah.
First baseman, outfielder, third baseman, and then closed out with pitcher, 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 mm-hmm. Third baseman, pitcher. So they, I mean, it's not as pitcher savvy, pitcher heavy as the Cubs, who only drafted two right. position players, but that's pretty pitcher heavy. I mean, and again, like I said, 4-year seniors and juniors and sophomores, 4-year college players, a lot of mature guys that are quicker to make that journey. Some, for the most part, they're 22, 23 year old guys. Mm-hmm. Those guys should be theoretically faster to the show, which if some of them pan out, some of them are good. You could maybe, you know, save some money on the back end of your rotation instead of overpaying for, like, say, I don't know, a Dallas Keuchel, and maybe they're good enough to kind of hold down that back part of the anchor part of the rotation. Mm-hmm. But Pallett, I mean, I'm looking at him. Who, I mean, of these draft picks, I mean, so you got Jonathan Cannon, another kid. I mean, look at some, mm-hmm. Arkansas, Georgia.
Yeah.
You got a UC Santa Barbara. Hey, UC Santa Barbara, I just mentioned
them. There's a Tennessee. I want to say there's a couple Arkansas. I think the catcher's from Arkansas, too. What's his name? Michael Turner.
Uh-huh.
I want to say the catcher's from Arkansas, too.
So let's see here. So for you, what?
Got a Ball State guy, too.
Yep. What picks today or from that draft stood out to you is, because I mean, you seem like you seem a little bit down on the Noah Schultz. What are mm-hmm. the picks that you looked at that you said, okay, I'm in. I dig. That was a good one. Or are there any that you looked at and you said, nice? Or were you kind of like, meh?
Eh.
Meh.
I mean, honestly, I was kind of eh. But that's, you know, when you're drafting at 26, I mean, all the top tier, you know, all the top tier talent in theory should be gone by the time you get to 26. So you're relying on your scouts, your scouting director to have a good idea of who could be the diamonds in the rough. And maybe, you know, and in all honesty, maybe Schultz becomes the next Randy Johnson or the next Chris Sale. But I think it's a big gamble to take on, is he 18 or 19? Did he turn 19 yet?
His, he was born, who, Schultz? He turns 19 on August 5th.
Oh, so he's turning 19 in a week and a half, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a lot to put on an 18-year-old kid.
That means he was an older senior. Because most seniors turn 18 during their senior year.
Yeah. Well, so, did he lose a year because of mono?
Well, he lost a season because of mono.
Yeah, okay. But did he lose a school year?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, no. I mean, you still can. I mean, especially getting mono during a virtual, after the virtual shutdown. There's never an excuse to not get your work done now at this point.
Yeah.
Says the teacher. But.
Yeah. But, you know, again, I think you're buying, and with any draft, you're buying lottery tickets.
Yep.
And you're hoping that, you know, you can cash them in. And I truly dislike comps. Especially with draft picks. Because you're dealing with kids anywhere from like 17, 18 to 22, 23 generally. Mm-hmm. And saying, you know, I'll give one White Sox, a famous White Sox one. Saying Joe Borchardt is the next Mickey Mantle, that one, that's not a fair comparison. You know, saying Schultz is the next Randy Johnson or Chris Sale or profiles like Randy Johnson or Chris Sale, not fair to him. Let him be Noah Schultz. You know, would I want him to profile? Would I want him to become that? Absolutely. But let him get there first.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's a, I mean, that's a, like you said earlier too, you want to, you know, if you hit on a first round and then become a starter, great. Like that's mm-hmm. what you want. That's a win. You know what I mean? Everyone, right. I mean, it's not the NBA. This is not the NFL where you draft a first rounder and like they need to be like a rookie of the year, an mm-hmm. MVP candidate, you know, you're a superstar. You can get those. Yeah, you want those, it's not the same.
Yeah. People need to realize that the MLB draft is drastically different than the NBA or the NFL draft because the NBA or the NFL draft, that player's if you draft a player in the first round, 9 times out of 10, they're in your starting lineup from day one. They're not going to a developmental league or low A, single A, double A ball. No, they're on your roster, and they're supposed to be contributing from day one. That's not how it applies here. That's why it's such a lottery ticket.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't sound
Speaking of which, I need to go get some for that $770 million or whatever it is in the Mega Millions.
Right. It might help pay some of these all of these draft picks that have not been signed. Now, the Cubs, on the other hand, the Cubs have actually signed all but two of their top 10. Mm-hmm. And then let's see here. Nobody else. So they've been focused. Looks like the Cubs focused on their top 10. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, no. Let's see here. This is not updated, because I know that the Cubs just released that they had signed 8 of their top 10. And this Major League Baseball, that's July 23rd, really? No, okay, that's interesting. Well, with the Cubs, you know, they've been paying a little bit, whereas the White Sox, it looks like they're kind of sitting on their hands right now and kind of figuring out what they have, which be kind of interesting to see how many of these. I mean, I think that there's no rush, but here's me. Like, why are you not? Like, I want to get these guys in my system as soon as possible. Oh, I want to get absolutely. These guys going and get them to learn. And every day wasted is a wasted day. And I don't know. It feels weird that they're not kind of rushing, but, you know, obviously there's a lot of money out there, so the White Sox have to pay, but... There's not really any selections that stood out to you. You're not a now. The
Cade Horton one makes me chuckle a little bit, because in some of the projections I read before the draft, Cade Horton was one of the names going to the White Sox at 26.
Yeah.
So that one obviously stuck out a little bit for me. You know it.
Oh, the
like
Sox
you said,
did,
though, I mean, what did they draft? Like
the Sox did sign their number 20 pick, their 20th round pick for $100,000.
Yeah.
So I think that's $100,000. It says 100.0K. I think that means 100K or $100,000. I don't know what that means.
I mean,
it's $100,000. So it looks like they signed Ethan Hammerberg from Ohio State, a lefty swinger. Swings left from the left side, but he's a pitcher, so it doesn't matter. 4-year junior out of Ohio State. So they have signed one player.
Right. So they got two players locked up.
And Schultz, yeah. So two players total. Right. The first and the last. You
know,
yeah. And
Alpha and Omega.
The Cubs have signed Horton, correct?
Yes, Horton signed. And we'll get to that Ferris? In a second. Yeah, too.
Yeah.
But with the White Sox, are there any picks from the White Sox to you that stand out, though, before we jump over to the Cubs window?
I know... The philosophy is to draft the best available player. But I do like the catcher that they drafted. I'm pulling up his name right now.
Michael Turner?
Michael Turner from
Arkansas.
Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's a need that they are going to have very, very soon. And hopefully he is someone who can progress. You know, and again, I know that goes against the whole model of draft the best available player, but you have a lot of holes in this organization. And I'm going to say something a little bit later when we talk about the trade deadline, and it isn't flattering to this organization. That's called a tease.
Ooh. All right. So let's see here. I just lost my page now. That freaking sucks. All right, so jumping in. So you like the catcher. I thought there was a I think there's a good connection here actually with the Cubs as well, with a player that the Cubs drafted later on in the draft. I believe it was Connor Noland. So you guys, White Sox, they drafted the actual starting catcher for Arkansas. The Cubs drafted the backup catcher for Michael Turner, who the White Sox took from Arkansas. The Cubs took his backup as a pitcher. Now, he basically threw a third of an inning this year, two-thirds of an inning last year. He has zero experience on the bump when it comes to competitive baseball, at least in a real competitive baseball. Maybe he did some sort of side things during the summer or something. I thought that was a really interesting part. So there's a little connection there. The Cubs drafted the other Arkansas catcher, but not as a catcher.
Now, there's one I have to ask you about for the Cubs.
Oh, sure. Well, let's wrap up the White Sox first, though.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And if you got anything left with the White Sox, then yeah, I'd like to go through all the, you know, the go through the Cubs too. I've done enough analysis with these guys over the last couple of weeks now, where I'm very familiar with the Cubs.
No, I really don't have anything left for the White Sox except just to say, the draft, because in the position they were in, they can't, you're not getting the possibly known, like, Bryce Harper, Ken Griffey Jr. 1-1 commodity.
Right.
And also, people remember, in baseball history, there's only 3 1-1 draft picks that are in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Three. All those years, there's only three.
Yep. Because it's not that easy.
Right, exactly. So don't, if the first rounder fails, which is a distinct possibility. We don't want it to happen, but it's a distinct possibility. Don't be surprised, because as we talked about, the MLB draft is a lot different from the NFL and the NBA draft. Mm-hmm. Because just get to know the name and look back in 3 years to see where they are. Because there's guys I was excited about in the past with the White Sox. I'll give one as an example, Evan Skouk. I was excited they got him. That was 5 years ago. He's still floundering around in high A, mm-hmm. or double A, one or the other. Still floundering around. Never amounted to anything.
It's hard to make it through. It does.
Yes.
And before we jump over to Cubs, I'll say this. The one thing I did like about the White Sox draft is I do like the palate kid. I like the Peyton palate kid. But I also love the fact that they drafted his catcher, his college catcher. So you've got a kid that's going to be coming through the White Sox. Now, remember, Pallett was ranked higher than Noah Schultz.
Yes.
Pallett is actually the highest ranked draft pick of the White Sox 2022 class. So bringing in a dude that could be a dude, maybe project as a 3, 4, or 5 in the rotation. One great way to keep someone comfortable is to, go ahead and bring his catcher along with him. Mm-hmm. So they brought Michael Turner from Arkansas as well. So that's a kind of a cool thing. And Turner does swing from the left side, so I do appreciate that as well as a catcher. It's like a kind of like a Rick Wilkins kind of thing, or even a David Ross kind of thing, where the guy can hit. He hits from the left side, gives you a left-handed bat, probably will hit like maybe 210, 220, but handles your pitchers really well. So hopefully that'll be Michael Turner. He's also an older guy. He's a 98, so he's almost 24. He turns 24 on August 18th. So you've got a 24-year-old catcher coming in. So that's the maturity there through the organization. Those types of guys are important beyond just them making to the show. You want a good organizational mind catcher, discipline leader guy that can kind of come around as well and help your pitchers out, like a Crash Davis, if you will, that can be there and might not make it to the show, but the impact that they have on some of these young arms as they come through might be impactful and profound. So, all right, jump into the Cubs. Cubs, now this is you did bring up Cade Horton.
Yeah.
And the Cubs, their draft went pretty interesting as well. And I the thing that stood out to me with the Cubs, obviously, besides the fact that they did kind of shock the world, Cade Horton had some top 13, top, he was in some circles, he was ranked as a top 13. But here's the thing with Cade Horton. Cade Horton was a mediocre college pitcher this year and the previous years when he was actually able to throw. Remember, he had Tommy John surgery. He's also a third baseman. So comes off of Tommy John surgery this year for Oklahoma, plays third base the entire season, mind you, to hit like 220, not very good, and slowly pitched, came back and threw a couple innings here as a reliever here and there. And then towards the end of the season, they started ramping him out and spreading him out as a starter. So he's a year and some change removed from his Tommy John surgery. He learned towards the end of the season, he learned a slider from a teammate and started to implement that slider as they started their College World Series run. Now, Cade Horton, make no mistake about it, was drafted based on his final 5 starts as a college baseball player. And everybody else, throughout all the other stuff that he's done over the course of his college and high school career, for those 5 starts. The 5 starts got him his draft pick. The Cubs drafted him 7th overall, even though he was ranked 24th overall, at least according to MLB, I told you, the MLB's rankings at least. Ranked 24th overall, his last 5 starts. He had a high spin rate on that slider, which, like, I'm going to be honest, concerns me because we don't know how that slider is going to affect his Tommy John elbow over time. Is it a healthy slider with a huge spin rate, or is it an unhealthy slider that's going to turn him into Kerry Wood? Very fast. He throws hard, He's a big dude. He's well liked. He's a fourth year sophomore, which makes me laugh. But he's 6'1", 211. He does touch upper 90s. He signed at $4.45 million, which is 1.2 plus under slot. And we'll talk about why in a second. I understand it. It better pay off. It'll work. It should work. But when you look at what the Cubs have done, they took a gamble. They took a guy. The Collier kid was there. I wanted Collier bad. Cam Collier. You know, he signed today. He signed for 1.6 over slot. So now it makes sense why the Cubs didn't take him, because they don't want. That's a $3 million difference in what they thought that they were going to be willing to pay. 1.4 under slot or 1.2 under slot for Horton, and then 1.6 over slot.
What did he sign for with the Reds?
1.6 million over his allotted slot. So,
but what was his allotted slot?
Let's see here.
Do you know?
Let's see here.
Because the Reds, I mean, yeah, it would be over the 5.7 allotted for the Cubs pick at number 7, but I don't think it would be, would it be that much over?
He signed for more than $5 million. And Cubs slot for Horton was 5.7. So he signed for $300,000 over the Cubs, what the slot was. But right. My point is, if you take what Horton signed for under slot, which is 1.2 under slot, the Cubs were only willing to pay 4.4 million in that seventh hole slot, even though it was 5.7 million for the actual allocated slot value. Yeah. Right, right. So the Cubs were not willing to go higher than Caleb Horton. And they've said it very openly. Horton was their guy. That was from the start. They wanted Horton. They knew they were going to take Horton because they knew that nobody else was going to take Horton in that seventh pick. No way. I mean, if he had been taken 13th, 14th overall, yeah, someone might, that wouldn't have turned heads. This turned heads a little bit, but the wipeout slider, he had a great postseason run. Those are concerns for me because, again, College World Series, lots of adrenaline. Dudes show up sometimes. How is he going to do against the Pittsburgh Pirates in May? How is he going to do, you know, yeah, you can roll out. Great. Mm-hmm. You were really hot for 5 straight games. And yes, the wipeout slider graded out metrically is a great pitch, but how are you, 5 games, literally the Cubs used 5 games as the determining factor of whether or not they take this guy or not. That to me is a concern because it's the consistency issue. And, you know, we haven't seen this guy stay healthy for a considerable amount of time as a pitcher. So it's a huge crapshoot. There's and a workload as a third baseman. Who, shame on his Oklahoma coaching staff, putting him at third base and having him do double duty as a pitcher after Tommy John surgery. I would have put that guy in bubble wrap and never let him touch third base again. Only to hit 220. I mean, he hit like 220, 230. Like, not even a good hitter for the college. Like, it was a waste. Why are you risking that kid's health? And so he does throw 98, they said, and sometimes they said he might be able to, you know, maybe even hit 100. I don't know, triple digits, but I don't know. They've signed him, so he's locked up. 4.4 million. Again, 1.3-ish. Under the slot, and then that leaves the Cubs up for their second overall pick in the second round, which is Jackson Ferris, who was projected to be a higher pick than Cade Horton. But I am a huge fan of the Jackson Ferris pick. A big, tall lefty, a dude that for me, he's 6'4 and 195, throws hard. IMG Academy in Florida. You know, he played with the second or third overall pick, Green, played with him at IMG, a really good ball player as well. But 6'4, he's a lefty. So he's going to have to be, it's going to probably cost them. His pick value for the slot is 1.66. So they haven't signed him. But with the savings from the Cade Horton deal, I'm sure that
they're talking about two.
Yeah. The second overall pick is worth 1.6. Second round pick for the Cubs.
Yeah.
The 47th overall is a 1.66 slot value. I'm going to assume he's probably going to sign for 2.1, 2.2.
Okay.
I feel like they're going to take at least half of that savings from Horton and roll it to him. The other half, I think, is going to go to Najir Mule, their fourth round pick, who is also a high school kid who is going to be very good, I think, one day. But, I mean, with the Horton thing, I mean, you said you had some thoughts on Horton. So what were you thinking? What's your thoughts on the Horton thing?
No, it wasn't Horton I had thoughts on. It was... their 11th round pick, Brandon Noriega.
No school. Yep.
That's the one that stuck out. It's like, where's this kid coming from?
I'm 100% under the belief that this is one of the first Major League Baseball prospects to utilize TikTok as a marketing tool for the draft. No school, no connections. And if you look at his TikTok page, there's a bunch of pitching videos. And so I would love to hear the story behind how they figured out who the hell he is. But a real big part of me believes that they saw him on TikTok. It caught their eye. And in maybe one of the first examples of TikTok being a major league draft resource, they found this kid and then it gave him another look and gave him a chance to see what the kid has. And the kid flew under radar. And they signed him. I mean, so that's what I'm thinking. I'd love to hear. I don't know what the story is. That's me just creating fiction for it. But that is interesting, right? No school. Yes. He's from No School USA. Class of no school. So, and he was born in 01. So that means he's 7901. So he's 21 years old now. So he's 21 years old. So he's 3 years removed from high school. So he has zero connection. So what? Whoa. I bet you he's got a tripped out story. I'd love to hear that one day down the line.
Yes. And, you know, and also just, in fairness to the Cubs on this, you know, you're talking about the TikTok video. Remember, they signed the White Sox signed Tadahito Iguchi based off a video.
Yep.
Never actually saw him in person. Based it entirely off a video.
So with the Cubs, I didn't like the Horton pick. I was upset. I was pissed. The Ferris pick.
Yes,
when you
I
take,
know.
When you take that average together, though, of those two players together, you know, in the mean value of this. And again, people don't, I'm not saying that Cade Horton isn't a 13th, you know, top 13 player. Mm-hmm. I'm saying with the value that you got between you average out the mean between Horton and Ferris, what the Cubs really got were on average two late first, mid, you know, later first round picks for the price of the first and the second overall, first and second round. That's mm-hmm. the way I look at it.
So in theory, what you're saying that then is take the number seven and what was, you know,
well, Ferris was ranked in the top 20.
47. No, ranked. What you're saying though is, so instead of looking at it as a number seven and a number 47,
look at it 223rds.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Look at it as 23 and 24 or something like that.
Something where you got better than what, you know, I mean, it will, you know, and they're good. I don't think that they're like, I would say neither are projects. It's just a lot of risk. And when you look at what the Cubs did with their draft this year, there's a lot of dudes coming through this draft that have a lot of risk when it comes to arm surgery and whatnot. But they all are high velo guys. I mean, when you get to the Cubs, look, I mean, the second day of the draft, the Cubs drafted just two players in their 10 picks under 6'4". Brandon Noriega was 6'2". And their last pick, Keshawn Collier, at least they got one Collier, right? From Meridian, Mississippi. He's 5'8", 160. Everybody else, Cubs went in the 12th round, 6'4", 6'4", 6'4", 6'5", 6'5", 6'5", 6'7", 6'6". And they all are hard throwers. These are all dudes that throw hard. Except for the Hayden McGreery kid we'll talk about in a second. That's the Colorado Mesa University kid, the catcher, who hits fucking bombs. And he plays with one of my former pitchers that I coached. As a pitching coach. And so his catcher was Hayden McGreery. So he had some pretty interesting stuff to tell me about Hayden. We'll copy that when we come back down the line. But with those first two picks, I was upset at first. And then once it started rolling out, I mean, it was almost insane. It was like, it felt like Tommy Boy when he's like, what's for dinner tonight? Chicken or chicken? Because it was like, what are the Cubs drafting? A pitcher or a pitcher? Mm-hmm. So they went pitcher, shortstop, and then pitchers all the way through down till the 15th round. And then a catcher, pitcher, outfielder, pitcher, outfielder. So they three position players, four position players out of 20. The rest are all pitchers. So for the Cubs, the Ferris kid is good. He's a good hard throwing lefty. Again, 6'4". He's going to be a pretty good ball player out of IMG Academy. Then in the third round, they did a power projection. They took a kid from Temecula Valley High School, another high school shortstop. A power projection kid. I'm not entirely sure about assignability, but He was ranked 86th overall, 166, or he was picked 86th overall. The Paciello kid was actually, Chris Paciello was his name. He was ranked 166th mm-hmm. according to MLB.com's draft preview. But a strange pick, but it's a power profile. I think that they're going to probably throw some money at him, or they, you know, they take less for the slot. He's a kid that should be happy to be picked, should be lucky to be picked in the third round. Maybe he'll take less than his pick value slot of $735K. Maybe he'll sign for $500K, and there's another $200,000 that you can kind of filter down. Especially this Nasir Mule. So the fourth round pick for the Cubs was Nasir Mule. He is a two-way player. Actually, he can actually hit too as well. He's big. He's 6'3". A lot of raw power as a hitter. I mean, I'm okay with this guy giving it both shots. Being a, you know, this is the Shohei Ohtani era now. So why not let the kid go? Throws about 93 to 96 as a slider. changeup. Very good athlete. And he has thrown 100 miles an hour. Apparently, he has touched triple digits, but it wasn't really, really not great command. But once he started finding the strike zone, he's committed to Miami. And so this is going to cost a little bit. And so I think that he was one of those guys. That's why they saved a little money with their first overall pick, is he's one of those pitchers that they had targeted, saying this guy's going to cost more than the 538 that his slot is asking for. So
right,
got him again, but he's a high school kid, high school senior. So the Cubs went 4-year sophomore with Cade Horton because of the injury and the COVID, and then high school senior, high school senior, high school senior, with those the 2, 3, 4, you know, pitcher, shortstop, pitcher. Then they went to a guy named in the fifth round, Brandon Birdsell. He's a senior, 4-year senior out of Texas Tech. I have a guy, one of the scouts that I'm friends with that I talk to a ton, has actually watched him pitch a lot. They saw that was his region, so he got to see Texas Tech a ton. He says that I'm going to absolutely love Brandon Birdsell. He's a 6'2", 240-pound hoss. He's a guy that you want. He's a bulldog on the bump, throws hard, and might be a dude that intimidates a lot of people. He, you know, I think I heard a Liam Hendricks or a Lance Lynn comparison, if I'm not mistaken. A big dude that just has balls. So I'm interested to see how that plays. His pick value was 402. He signed for 380,000. So he signed for underslot. Again, why? Because he doesn't have a choice. He's a 4-year senior. And then they went to a kid who didn't even pitch at all this year, Will Frisch. He had Tommy John, but his slot was 303,000, and he signed for 230,000. Again, 80,000 under slot. But he hasn't thrown. He's a righty-righty out of Oregon State. So that should be, again, crapshoot. We'll see. And then this was a weird one. They took this random kid from Grand Canyon University in the seventh round, Nick Hull. Right, wasn't even ranked. Nick Hull's slot value, 237,000. He signed for 25,000.
That's a lot of savings.
Poor kid. That's so messed up. I mean, he's a 5th-year senior, so he was like a graduate senior. Actually, I think that's what 5S means. It's a 5th-year senior, which graduate. So that kid signed for.
So does that mean graduate student?
Yeah, graduate student. I think. Okay. So he signed for 220 under slot, basically. which again, the Cubs are going to save money on. And they did. Mm-hmm. And then in the eighth round, this was a wowzer. They took Mason McGuire out of Capistrano Valley High School, son of Mark McGuire, who is a pitcher. So they didn't draft a bat when they drafted Mark McGuire's son. They took Big Mac's son, who's the pitcher. But he's 6'4".
Is this the son he was picking up when he hit his 62nd homer?
Ooh.
I don't think so, because that's 25 years ago, and that kid was like 10.
Yeah, no, this might be.
It can't be. He's got to be, you know.
Let's see here. Yeah, no, that wasn't the same one. That hits the younger, another one of his kids. Mm-hmm. So he pitches. That was interesting. And then, there's the Cubs with Colin Connor Noland out of Arkansas. This is a kid who threw a third of an inning this year and two-thirds last year.
And the backup catcher.
His slot was 164, and he signed for 200,000. So the Cubs must have seen something in his bullpens that they thought, because he's not being drafted as a catcher. He hit like 200. Like, he's not very good. So you got that kid. So he signed for under slot or over slot by 35,000. So the money you save on, I mean, again, you're trying to average all the mean out, basically. You're trying to, you know, if you sign for Horton, you took someone no one was going to take at 7. He signs for a million plus under slot, and you can spread that thin down the way and trickle it down to the rest of your picks. The Noriega kid then came in the eighth round. Matthew Peters out of Ivy Tech, Indiana. Interesting, again, a 4th-year sophomore, 6'4", throws hard. You got a kid out of Venezuela, Luis Ruano, who I actually was really, I dug this kid, actually. He is a big kid. He's got raw tools. He's a project, but he throws 96, 97, sits like in the low 90s, low mid 90s. But, you know, he's 19 at draft time. He's a guy that needs some time to develop, but this is a guy that the Cubs system, which I feel like they've improved their pitching development, has been really good at the lower levels for the Cubs. So this guy would benefit from him. Then they get a kid, Shane Marshall from Georgia, big 6'4" righty, again, hard thrower. And then the Hayden McGreery kid, the kid he's the all-time Colorado Mesa. Oh, the kid that they got from Ivy Tech. He's also Ivy Tech's all-time home run leader. So he's a big home run power guy.
Yep.
Or excuse me. No, that's not him. I'm an idiot. Maybe. Did I do that right?
Are you thinking Peters? The McGreery kid from Colorado Mesa?
I feel like they said Peters pitched or was a position guy too. But the McGreery kid hit 31 jacks this year. He's a freak. And the McGreery kid, he's a big catcher. He's 6'5", 235-pound hoss. He signed for 100.
That's a big catcher.
Yeah, 125,000, you know, so there's not really a slot there. That's, but he signed for $125. But when I talked to my former player about him, flat out what he told me was, where is he? Frankie told me, I got to pull up the text. I want to make sure I don't misquote him. He said, and I quote, again, I want to quote, dude is a gamer, !! Best hitter I've ever seen, and pretty athletic for his size. He's a balanced hitter that can put the ball 450 feet. It's a great pickup. So he, big fan of his catcher going. So I don't know. Maybe the Cubs got a guy that could be a power hitting catcher down the line. But you love those kind of guys because they're going to put your, they're going to shove you against the wall. They're going to protect your pitcher at least.
And oh, without question.
I think he
don't think twice about charging a mound if that big boy's back there.
Allegedly, is a big fan of beer. Good beer, like craft beer. So that's another part of it. So that's another dude that the Cubs. I'm going to keep an eye on that guy just because he might have been a diamond in the rough because Colorado Mesa is a Division II school. Sometimes big guys like that get lost in the shuffle, but he is the all, you know, he led the, you know, he's one of the national leaders in home runs. He was actually even got a Golden Spikes, got some Golden Spikes heat. Waltz. So that's pretty cool. And then there was a kid named JP Weed, a Next Level Academy. He's a high school senior, 6'5", .185, pitcher. Andy Gariola out of Old Dominion, a fourth year senior, 6'5", 235. The Garrett Brown kid out of Georgia, fourth year senior, 6'7", 218 pounds. A lot of these guys don't have great numbers. When you look at their stats, it is all for the Cubs about projectability and hard throwers. And they did that. And they have this plan. And so when you talk about what the Cubs did, you also have to take into consideration who was drafting. So Jed Hoyer a couple of years ago was, I mean, it was basically you lose control of the draft. You are no longer, this isn't, you suck at drafting. Jed Hoyer is fantastic at taking other people's talent, trading his players for someone else's talent that they've vetted, because his draft, for example, in 2019, I don't think there's a major leaguer in the entire draft that's going to be one day a major leaguer. He wasted an entire 2019, which is his last draft. Kantrovich, I forgot his first name now, was hired this in 2019 after the draft, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so he was with the Cardinals, and let's see here. If I could find his, Dan Kantrovich. Now, he has done this twice before as a draft guy, which is take mostly pitchers, almost all pitchers, right? Two of those draft netted Flaherty and Waka for the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. So not bad, right? So this is his thing. Hawkins, the Cubs GM, comes from Cleveland, also has some pitching, has been known to be a pitching expertise. I feel like Jed was basically told, keep your hands off the draft, let these guys do their job and do their job. And this guy now, I know that the Nats have already reached out. I know the Nats are very interested in Kantrovich to become their new general manager. So the Cubs might lose him pretty soon here, depending, because he's had a couple of really good drafts. So the draft strategy was there. They followed it. They held to it. I don't have a problem with it. If I had to grade the Cubs draft, I'd give him a B+ to an A-, which isn't bad. I say B+ because of the draft risk of injury, especially with the first overall pick with a guy that had five great starts, and that's what we're basing everything on, is those five great starts, and can his body hold up? If it does, it might be a fantastic pick that we'll look at one day and go, what a hell. They were playing chess when everyone else was playing checkers. I personally think that the Jackson Ferris kid's going to pan out. The Najee Mule pick, I really, really love. Let the kid give it a shot. Sign the kid and say, yeah, you can play both ways. You can go give it a shot until you're tired of it. And then whatever you're doing best at the time, we'll go there. But not a bad draft. I think it was a good draft. And I think the Cubs, you know, they lacked pitching depth in their organization. It's not done. You know, the Juan Soto stuff, you might see some of these names might be, they might not ever even sweat in a Cubs jersey for all we know. So we'll see how that works out. But not terrible. Not great. I wouldn't say not great. It was a B+. It was a B+. A-.
Yeah. And the one thing I struggle with is grading a draft a week after it happened, because I believe you can't really grade it until 2-3 years down the road to see where they wind up. Because it is like, you know, unless you've got a Bryce Harper or a Chipper Jones or someone like that, or a Ken Griffey Jr. at one, it's all a crapshoot. And you hope that your guys know what the hell they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, you had mentioned Juan Soto. which brings up an interesting topic.
It's a good segue.
That is the trade deadline.
Yeah.
So the obvious question to you is, are Contreras and Happ and Robertson going to be gone?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you can't not. I mean, if the Cubs were willing to pull the trigger last year for Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, and Anthony Rizzo, they got to be willing to pull the trigger on these two, because, you know, I actually think that Ian Happ has more value trade-wise than Wilson Contreras. Wilson's a rental. His contract is up at the end of the season. Ian Happ is cost-controlled for another year and a half. He's arbitration eligible. He's going to get a little bit more in the offseason, but he's not getting paid like some superstar money that's going to be something that Wilson Contreras. So Wilson's going to be more of a rental for whoever he goes to, which really does. And he's dinged up a little bit. He's got a little soft tissue. He's been struggling with a little bit here and there. His numbers have gone down. We've talked about this. They waited too long. Should have traded him in June when he was at a high value. At least on the positive, Ian Happ is actually at a high value right now. Robertson's going to go just because he's been a good closer for the Cubs. But Happ is the one that intrigues me the most. I hate to see Happ go. He's done a really, you know, the Cubs have really kind of worked on him. He's come a long way. You know, there's been times where he was sent down because of his performance, but he's, you know, he's well-liked. Fans love him, and he's come back, and he's fine. He's an all-star, man. And it's unfortunate that he's going to have to go, and it's unfortunate the Cubs have to trade talent that they've spent all this time developing to have him go thrive for somebody else. I'll put it this way. Chris Bryant, now that he's healthy and he's back, in the month of July for the Rockies is slashing .338, .403, .662 with 6 doubles, 5 homers, and 10 RBIs since July 1st. That's an MVP month. That's a player of the month nominee to continue. I mean, he hit a jack and 2 doubles last night. He is playing Chris Bryant baseball now that he's healthy. The babies are done. He's, you know, his wife finally had the babies, the twins, that will never go to Minnesota. Ha ha. But, you know, they're always happy to pull a trigger. They got to pull it with Ian Happ too. I mean, it sucks though, because again, you should be supplementing these guys, not turning them loose to somebody else. And that's the unfortunate product of their poor Jed and Theo, but Jed is the general manager, right? At least some fault, but people for some reason want to blame Theo and not Jed. So either Jed's a bitch and Theo does everything, and so then Jed gets no credit for the World Series either. It's so weird. They want to give him credit for the World Series, but they don't want to blame him for the bad shit that happened. So which one is it? Was he involved or not? Was it Theo or was it Jed too? And that's where it kind of drives me nuts with Cub fans, is they're willing to make excuses for Jed when there's no excuses, man. You've been in this. This has been your franchise for 10 years now, pal. You are part of this. You're the reason. So they should have had to sell off their superstars to actually have a farm system. But that's what happens when you draft like shit. That's why, having Kantrovich in now, you've got it somewhat, some at least a couple years of good drafting. I mean, the Cubs, you know, they passed on Montgomery last year. But the Jordan Wicks kid's going to probably turn out to be a number two or number three, number four in the Cubs rotation if it pans out. I mean, he's starting to pitch well against kids that are 4 years younger than him at high A. So they moved him up to double A. So he's going to get a good look there. Now we're going to see what he really has. And he did come on strong as of late. So I'll keep, you know, make me forget Colson Montgomery, because it's hard to forget a guy that's as good as Colson Montgomery as well as he is. But it is what it is. So the trade values, I mean, I think Happ's going to get some stuff. I think Wilson will get some. But Cubs fans need to taper back their expectations for the haul. It's not going to be a Chris Bryant haul. It's not going to be a Javi Baez haul. And it's not going to be an Anthony Rizzo haul. It's going to be a haul for a catcher who is, as a catcher, has a very good offensive profile. But a guy that has only caught, you know, 40% of the games this year. They've had him in bubble wrap all year for this reason. So how is he going to handle it if he's your two-go guy all the time? Now, if you put Willie as a DH, he's average at best as a DH. His bat is, but as a catcher, it profiles well. But if he's your DH, that's not that much value. Ian Happ, on the other hand, from both sides of the plate, as a switch hitter, provides value beyond just as an outfielder. He can also play second base if need be. That's what he was drafted as. And obviously he can DH as well. So I think that that's just, I think the highest valued guy the Cubs have is Ian Happ. So they're going to be sellers. We'll see who they're going to help and supplement down the stretch. Whereas the White Sox, on the other hand, look like they should be at least in somewhat buy mode. So where do you see the White Sox?
I agree with you. They should be in buy mode, but I'll be honest with you. How they play this week can change that at a heartbeat, because they have two games in Colorado Tuesday and Wednesday, and then they play Oakland at home this weekend. they should curb stomp them. In all honesty, they should curb stomp them. If they don't win four out of the five games, they, you know, I don't know what to expect, because this mirrors 2016 so much. It is downright scary. They're a 500 team. What is a 500 team? Mired in mediocrity. What was Rick Hahn's famous words in 2016 about the White Sox at the trade deadline? Mired in mediocrity. Why did they do the rebuild? Because in 2016, they had starters get injured and they had no depth. And they had no one in the minor leagues who they could trade to fill holes. What's the difference between the 2016 White Sox organization and the 2022 White Sox organization? Absolutely fucking nothing. They're in the same goddamn boat they were in 2016. The same goddamn boat. Right now, in all honesty, they should be one of the front runners on Juan Soto. But they don't have anything to give for Juan Soto. Juan Soto is another white whale for them. He is. A left-handed power bat that they could put in right field. Boy, haven't we heard this one before? But of course, they don't have anything to give up. And honestly, there is a possibility they could get Juan Soto by doing the unthinkable, taking on Patrick Corbin's contract. Because the cost will be a lot less if you take on Patrick Corbin's contest. But the White Sox brain trust is more about having other people take on their money than taking on other people's money. So as far as the trade deadline, I don't expect anything, to be honest with you. I see them standing still. You know why? Because, and these are quotes that they've already said this past week. Sheets is playing better. We can have him in right field. Oh, we're getting Grandal back. It's like acquiring a player at the trade deadline. Oh, maybe we'll get Luis Robert back. It'll be like acquiring a player at the trade deadline. These refrains over and over again. It's frustrating as hell. And it just... This is the model of a second-class organization. That's what you are, and that's what you're going to continue to be. Unfortunately, the White Sox have reached the Bill Wirtz Blackhawks point. Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn are basically Bob Pulford. Have a job for life, even though they fail miserably at it. You want to see the Dilbert principle at work? Look at the White Sox front office. And I know everyone wants to blame Tony La Russa. It's all Tony's fault. It's all Tony's fault. No. You know, people bitch about Tony's lineup construction. Guess what? He can only build a lineup with what he's given. How many first basemen do you have playing right field? At least two of them. Sheets and Vaughn. They're two first basemen playing right field. I feel bad for them. They're playing out of position. They're being put in a position to fail. And everybody says, oh, it's Tony. No. Where's the right fielder you said you were going to go get in the offseason? He ain't there. Where's he at? You know, unfortunately, this franchise won't change until there is a change at the top. And when I said this before, I still mean it. You need someone to come in at the top, not as the manager, but at the top of the organization and clean fucking house. They should be going after Juan Soto. He solves all their needs, but they won't because they don't have the prospect capital to give up and they won't take on the Patrick Corbin contract.
Sounds like that. And then, by the way, just popped up, Tampa Bay catcher Mike Zunino is having surgery that will end his season. So Wilson Contreras just got a bump as far as
perhaps. Yes, he did. There's another suitor for Contreras.
Yeah. Yeah. So looks like, you know, what the teams do will play out here over the next week and a half, mm-hmm. 2 weeks. But obviously the Cubs and the White Sox are in very different directions.
Yes.
So, now, I'm running a little short on time. I only got about 26 more minutes before I've got to actually dip out of here. I actually have no problem, though, if you want to keep going or whatever.
Yeah, I just want to say a couple other things. Right now, for those of you who haven't heard, Jason Benetti just signed a contract with Fox Sports to be their number two or part of their number two college football broadcasting team. Sox fans, enjoy Jason Benetti. He's going to be gone soon. Yep. I know for fact that Jerry Reinsdorf is not a fan of Jason Benetti. He thinks he's just another run-of-the-mill announcer. Enjoy your time with Jason Benetti before he's gone. And also, I could see Lucas Giolito being traded in the offseason too. It's basically become crystal clear that not only is he not an ace, but that he's not going to sign an extension because he wants ace money. So get ready to see him be traded in the offseason too.
Okay. So there it is.
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to take a little bit of time here. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to get into the Facing Nolan Nope review or the live music stuff, but let's talk about this today. A couple things coming down the line. It is, don't forget, by the way, there's still 10 tickets available for Yumper and Swo at the show's special movie night that they're doing.
August 20th.
August 20th. So hop to Yumper and Swo at the show. It's at Yumper and Swo. So it's at Y-U-M-P-E-R. A-N-D-S-V-O, and check out there. They've got their they've got information there, but it's going to be a really nice night to help benefit Planned Parenthood, something they're very passionate about. So it's a charity barbecue and movie night. So tickets are $25 a piece. You get some food and beverage. There are going to be some door prizes, beer pong tournament, and movie TBD, but don't worry, Swo, I think, knows exactly what he's going to show. It's going to be Encanto for no, it's not. Promise it's not Encanto. I promise.
It'll be Halloween Kills.
Right. It'll be one of the Halloweens that Yumper hates completely. So, but give those guys some support. Again, you can also go to their Eventbrite. You can go to Eventbrite, and just if you look up Yumper and Swo's charity barbecue, you can pop up and find it there as well and buy your tickets on Eventbrite. Again, Saturday, August 20th, 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. And then here is Swo's home address. No, just kidding. Now we know where you live, mother. No, just kidding. But with that said, we a thing came down the line today as we're getting towards the seasons are changing in a sense. Fall is approaching quicker. School's going to be in session here in a couple weeks. And that also means training camp today. A couple organizations are already at training camp, and training camps are all players are starting to report around the NFL. Mm-hmm. And that means it's time to talk some football. So first thing that came out today, more than anything else that was great fodder, the Chicago Bears or somebody, I don't know who released it. I don't know who it was specifically, but
I think it was Ian Rappaport.
They released the designs for what, that's a good point though. Rule of thumb is to never trade with Tampa. That's true. You never win the trade. that's kind of terrifying to me now. Good point. But I believe it was Larry Holly from Holly Sports. So it's a WGN based thing. They released the renderings of the proposed dome renovations of Soldier Field, released by the mayor's office. So the mayor's office released that today. There are three possible renovations for the stadium. Two that include expansion of Soldier Field to 70,000. Now, the first time they got a chance to put their hands on Soldier Field, they basically landed a spaceship on it. When you look at some of these, I'm assuming there's going to be a door window that closes like we have at Allegiant Stadium here. Mm-hmm. But if not, that's really stupid to have a domed facility that has a big old open window in Chicago during the winter. That's the whole point, is to kind of keep it climate controlled. So I'm assuming that that window that you can look at the skyline the way that you can look at the Vegas Strip is open. So that's something they probably borrowed from Allegiant. And you can see the Chicago skyline open, you know, when that window's open. So that's kind of neat. But they had a lot of these different renderings. It looks pretty, you know, when some of these renderings, but does that really, you know,
look pretty.
The first option is a fully enclosed stadium by rebuilding both end zones with columns that can support the dome structure. Option two is rebuild both end zones with columns to make the stadium dome ready. Option three is modify Soldier Field to be a multi-purpose stadium better suited for soccer while improving its flexibility to accommodate major concerts and a range of events. Fine. Maybe even a Super Bowl one day. Option four is Arlington Heights.
Yes.
And I think most people are leaning towards that Arlington Heights option, probably more. Thoughts?
Considering the Bears refuse to even entertain conversations, I think we know where this is going. You know, why do they buy that land? You know, they're going to do a study on the land that they've already paid for to see if it's feasible to build a stadium there. Really? Well, the Bears are that dumb, but common sense says that feasibility study's already been done and they know the answer.
Yeah. Well, that makes
sense. You know, it's funny because everything the Bears have done has said point blank, we're going to Arlington Heights. Because why? They will own the land. They will own the stadium. They will own the naming rights. They don't have any of that right now.
Right. So they've got the, you know, so it's becoming the optics war. You see it all the time when cities want to make sure that they keep their franchise, but they're not really sold on actually giving what the franchise requests.
Right.
So they play that public opinion game, and now it's just going to get probably pretty ugly eventually. If the Bears move out, you know, if and when, you're going to see some broken relationships with the city of Chicago, I'm sure.
They will keep the name. They'll keep the name the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, but I'm saying the Chicago government will be. Just like when it got really tough, when Rahm Emanuel was in charge and the Cubs had a pretty big thing going with him, he made it life as a living hell for the Cubs for a long time to try to get that landmark status, to do the renovations to Wrigley, to make Wrigley a better place. When politics get involved, all of a sudden there's more dynamics to it's more than just about building a stadium and blah, blah, blah. You're playing a lot more public perception and
it's not only public perception, the politicians have to win. You know, that's the big problem of it. They have to win.
Yep. And they will. And in the end, they have more power than a lot. But but I'm not talking about mayors. Mayors aren't going to control this one. This one goes deeper than a mayor.
This one is going to be the gentleman sitting in Springfield will be getting involved at some point.
Yep. You can almost guarantee
it'll be that. The gentleman in Springfield versus the NFL commissioner.
Right. So
is what it'll boil down to.
With that, you know, that's just a little logistical stuff, geographic stuff. But the big news that came out today is that Roquan Smith, who has not extended his contract, will not be participating in training camp tomorrow when the veterans report because of the contract situation. He has not received an offer that he would remotely consider, so he's going to wait. Now, I think the Bears office, front office, has now done a great job, the new regime under Ryan Poles. And Ryan Poles, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, Ryan Poles. Sorry, I'm Ryan
Pace. Poles.
Right. That makes me. I feel like I say it wrong all the time because I'm like it's so close to Ryan Pace. But I think Ryan Poles is. I think he'll figure out something with Roquan Smith. There's a lot of cap space. It's just a matter of getting it done. And you know, a veteran like him, I'm fine with him not reporting tomorrow. Fine. You know, that's more snaps for his legs and his body and less wear and tear. I mean, you want him to be around his guys, but they understand. I mean, these guys are professional. He's a professional. Mm-hmm. He'll show up. He'll be ready to go. And I don't also, care what monster lower score Queef said about him in South Africa about something that happened 3 years ago. There's zero proof. There's zero evidence that he actually did anything. And so it's conveniently popping out right before his big contract. So there's the cleat chasing money grubbers are going to pop in and try and do their thing, but it's BS. But, you know, I mean, he's so integral in that defense. I mean, you got to sign him, right? I mean,
well, and the one thing is, if you take a close look at the Bears' financial responsibilities after this season, they could very easily sign him. Very easily. I think it's probably just a matter of structuring a contract where they don't overextend themselves this year, where it's like he, not necessarily deferred money, but it's like the first year is X and the second through fourth years are Y, you know, to account for the amount of flexibility they have at the end of this season is staggering.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Roquan Smith knows that he's going to sign.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, even his Instagram, he posted today a picture of him with that new Bears orange helmet that I kind of did. Yeah. I kind of like it. I like it. I mean, I
like it better than the old throwback one that they had.
The white one?
Not the white one. The blue with sort of...
Oh, with the white C, though?
Yeah. No, I like the blue with the white C. But they had the blue one with the orange on it.
Mm.
Not the C, but, you know, like a stripe on it.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, it would just like... Yeah. Almost like the reverse Cleveland Browns.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, he posted it in his uniform today, when the smoke clears, 58 going to be there. So,
yeah,
you know, take it for what it's worth. It's part of it. He's testing the new GM. He's pressing and pushing, seeing what he can get.
I wouldn't doubt that they're probably negotiating right now, and they're probably just working through the structure of it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's being safe. He's like, I don't want to go out there and get hurt and have this blow up on me. So I want to sit out until this is done. And it wouldn't surprise me if it gets done in like a week.
I mean, I can't remember who it was today. Daniel, maybe it was Greenberg Or
yeah,
I'm trying to remember. Yeah. One of them said it should take no more than 6 weeks to get this done. And of course, when this pops, and again, this is the kickoff. Like you said, he's keeping himself safe. It's the kickoff to negotiations. All these other idiot fan bases. Oh yeah, we'll send you our kicker for Roquan Smith. Man, this is the guy that we don't trade. All right, this is the guy that gets built around. It's fine. So he's going to get his deal. I'm not worried about him holding out, but other fan bases need to shut their pie holes. It's like that moron last year that thought that the Bears were going to trade. What was the trade? It was for Carson Wentz. Shut up, you morons. No, we're not going to. Bears are not going to send you Roquan Smith and, you know, David Montgomery. Pick,
you know, like a, your first rounder.
And two first rounders for Carson Wentz, dipshit. So it's not that. It's not that serious. This is how you kick off your negotiations. It doesn't hurt that once you drop this in the court of public opinion and optics, you got to do it. Like, it puts the pressure on the Bears. The pressure's not on Roquan Smith. It's the pressure's on the Bears to come to an extension agreement with him. And this throws it out there. Roquan
Smith will feel pressure is come September 1st.
Yep. After he's been paid, now go produce. That's it.
Right. Yep. Right. Exactly. Because he will be. The opener against San Francisco here in Soldier Field, he will be trotting out on the field. I am 100% confident of that. Now, whether he was in camp a day, a week, a month, is irrelevant. He will be on the field September 11th.
Yeah, there's just... Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm reading through some of these trade offers. Like, come on, man. Yeah, we're gonna send a third and a sixth round pick to the Bears for Roquan Smith. What? No. So anyway, so that's gonna be something that we're gonna see.
Yeah.
And as it comes down, we'll know exactly. But don't panic too much. I think 6 weeks max. I think it's fine for him to sit. He's a professional. He's gonna be in shape. He'll be just fine. And, oh, God. Cubs prospect Braylon Marquez has surgical debridement. That just posted just now. Prospect Braylon Marquez has surgical debridement of left shoulder last month and will miss the rest of the season. See, this is why prospects are prospects until they are not prospects. Like, Braylon Marquez is a stud. And... Yes. He's not healthy. He's a left-hander that now he just had to have his shoulder, debridement. I mean, what is a surgical debridement? I mean,
isn't that basically the equivalent of a cleanup procedure?
It's a removal of damaged tissue or foreign objects from a wound. So we could have bone chips. You could have scar tissue. We could have, there's conservative, which is autolytic debridement compared to like enzymatic or surgical debridement with sharp instruments where you got to like shave something down. He could have a spur in his shoulder. I mean, there's so many different things that you would, for reasons why you would have one of those, but here we go. Like, there's another reason why it's hard, for this to happen. So just keeping that in mind. Now, we got a couple extra seconds. I do have to dip out of here in about less than 12 minutes just because I have an event that I've got to get to. I got to leave the house at 5:30 my time, which is here in a little bit. But you did get a chance to see Facing Nolan, which is a documentary on Nolan Ryan and one of my favorite pitchers of all time. I'm actually a big disciple of Tom House. If you're a big fan of pitching.
And Tom House is featured in there.
Yeah, Tom House should be in there. Tom House is the guy that basically created that football throwing program that he utilized. And he also caught Hank Aaron's record-breaking home run, little side note. But
and was Nolan Ryan's pitching coach in his final days in Texas.
Correct. And so I actually have worked under Tom House a few times as a young ball player myself. Tom and I actually dialogue on social media quite a bit. Actually, him and I were privately DMing, a week ago about an idea. Like, he had posted it publicly, and I wrote my idea for it, but it's basically an all-encompassing kids league that allows kids to not specialize, but actually play three different sports in the league at all different times of year. So you get different coaches and all the coaches work together for like health and conditioning. And then when it's time for their season to start, they break away and it teaches everyone how to like work together, blah, blah, blah. But it also teaches kids to not specialize and enjoy and see what kind of sports are out there for you. So him and I were DMing on that. So I love Tom House, big fan, huge fan. One of the best pitching follows if not the best pitching follow on social media right now to watch.
Him and Pitching Ninja are my two favorites.
Yeah, him and Pitching Ninja are the two best follows. So if you get a chance, Tom House, give him a look. Yes. But yeah, you guys see Nolan, Facing Nolan.
Yes.
Tell me about it. What was it? I've had a friend that saw it, loved it. So what were your thoughts?
I loved it too. And, you know, a lot of people forget Nolan Ryan was a member of the 69 Miracle Mets. He started his career as a Met. Him and Tom Seaver were very tight until, you know, unfortunately, Tom Seaver left us. I do know that Nolan Ryan made a donation to the Hall of Fame and Tom Seaver at the time of his passing. But otherwise, you know, Nolan gets traded to the Angels. He thought he was going to the – when he got the call and they said, you're going to Los Angeles, he thought he was going to the Dodgers and it was ecstatic. And then he's like, oh, no, it's the Angels. And they talk about how his idol was Sandy Koufax. And he wanted to throw one no-hitter just to see what throwing a no-hitter is like. He winds up throwing seven, you know. And but it goes into how he felt, his maturation as a pitcher, his thought process. Remember, he was the first million-dollar free agent, too, back in 1980 when he signed with the Houston Astros. And it was completely driven on he was going to sign in Texas so he was close to his family. And Houston was about 30, 40 miles from his hometown in Texas. So he was signing there no matter what. And then they just offered him $1 million+, and that was that. And it's funny to see the press conference with him and J.R. Richard. And, you know, and what sadly happened like 6 months after that press conference with J.R. Richard. J.R. Richard, for those of you who don't know, was a pitcher who was absolutely on a Hall of Fame trajectory. Absolutely. If you want to see what J.R. Richard looked like pitching, go watch the 1980 All-Star game, because it was him and Steve Stone squaring off against each other in that game. And it talks about his time in Houston and how it broke down at the end and how he wound up with the Rangers. And that's where he came across Tom House as well, who helped him with, you know, the football, you know, throwing the football as a way of helping him keep his arm ready to go and all the steps he would take and everything else. His workout regime was he worked out every day except the day he pitched. Every day he worked out. You know, but it's a great insight into him as well. And he goes into, and they go into the Robin Ventura fight or Noogie Fest, if you will. And one interesting fact I found out about that is that is the most requested and sold picture of Nolan Ryan's career. Him giving, you know, Robin Ventura the business. And, you know, everybody wants him to sign it. Don't mess with Texas. Nolan Ryan. But it also talks about the end, how his career ended. He felt the tendon in his elbow snap on a pitch in Seattle. Mm-hmm. He threw another pitch and he knew he was like 46 at the time. And he just walked off the mound. He's like, I know I'm done. And, you know, they came out to him. He goes, I'm done. I'm done. He knew he was done, you know, and it goes into all that and everything else. And it has, you know, it has his wife, it has his kids, and it has his grandkids telling stories about him too. And, you know, some of the people who faced him, you know, George Brett talked about, I feared the guy. Even when I went into the Hall of Fame with him, I was still afraid to talk to him, you know, yeah. Stuff like that. But it is a great, great watch. You understand, it helps you understand a little bit the baseball life, and it really, really delves into the baseball life from the wife's angle as well.
Cool. I like that.
Which is really interesting to hear how she was basically mom and dad for the kids, because he was out, you know, they're in Texas, he's out in, you know, New York or California or wherever else, you know, he's on the road. Part of the reason why, like I said, why he signed with Houston was he wanted to be close to home, you know, and he was, except when he was on the road and all that kind of stuff. So highly, highly recommended. And they talk about how, you know, there was a pitch they measured of his in like 1974, I believe it was, that came across at 100 miles an hour. And they said using today's technology, they clocked it at 108.
No pun intended. No shout out.
That's actually what happened.
Little shout out. Well, the dude, led the league in, you know, he's a career all-time strikeout leader, right?
Yes.
And he's also
And Randy Johnson brought up a point. He goes, I'm number two in career strikeouts, and I'm 1,000 behind him.
People forget, though, he also is the career leader in walks. He's got that.
He's a career leader in walks. He's the career leader in home runs allowed.
Mm-hmm.
He's got grand slams allowed, I believe it was. At the end of it, they list out all the records he has, good and bad.
Nice. I like that because he's got that Brett Favre thing going too, like most career touchdown passes and most career touchdown, you know, interception things that he has.
Interception,
kind of thing. But that's, I mean, he's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. He's the Advil godfather too. Like he's a guy that you know, I mean, seven no-hitters. I mean, he's just a dude that just was great. So that's, I'm looking forward. I haven't gotten to see it yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
And he does dispel one myth. He does dispel one myth about, or I should say more so Tom House than him. The famous picture of him bleeding from the lip, you know, with the blood on his jersey. Uh-huh. He did, you know, it wasn't from some vicious line drive. It was from a grounder that popped up and just like hit a pebble or something and got him in the lip.
Yep. Doesn't take much.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bump, little bloody lip. So you got to see that. Now, one word that I'm going to, you know, I got to see a film yesterday that actually, if I were to step into a batter's box and face Nolan Ryan throwing a 108 mile an hour fastball, the film is actually the word that would come out of my mouth if offered the opportunity, which is nope. So yesterday I got a chance to go see the Jordan Peele film Nope. I would not call it a horror film. I would call it a suspense film. But I got a chance to see that yesterday in IMAX, which is what it was shot in, and it's native IMAX. So I did enjoy it. It was a good film. I don't know where it falls under his trilogy. I guess you want to call it his trilogy of Us and Get Out. But it's definitely less terrifying than those. This one's, you know, and it's less gory too. But this one is, I thought this felt like a vintage Alfred Hitchcock film. I think I'm going to say this about Jordan Peele. Jordan Peele is the M. Night Shyamalan that we deserve. Meaning his twists. Now, you don't want to get hogtied into twists too, right? You don't want to be that, like, because then everyone expects one every time. But his delivery is far more humble. Thus, I feel like his delivery is more effective in his films. He is not like, I mean, M. Night Shyamalan wants everyone is. I mean, if you watch a Shyamalan film, opening credits, his name is the biggest name you'll see on the opening credits. His ego is ego. Mm-hmm. Whereas even we saw this in our little text thread, someone was saying he was he's the greatest living horror director in blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, look, a guy named John Carpenter's still alive, man. Stop with nonsense. Because I don't think he considers himself to be a horror filmmaker. He's making suspenseful films. These films are all mine. Mm-hmm. They're not a horror. It's not like, I mean, maybe Us could be classified a little closer as horror, but these are not horror films. These are suspense films. These have deeper, you know, nefarious types of things. Now, yes, one would call it a horror film for African Americans if you saw the movie, you know, if you see Get Out. That's terrifying, right? But, you know, these products are fantastic. And in this film, you know, to give you a little rundown, the characters are, they run a horse training facility I forget where they're at. I think like in I want to say they're
like New Mexico or something,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, like in New Mexico, I believe it maybe is. And so it starts out this whole thing. I mean, by the way, there's a whole subplot, by the way, of this chimp called Gordy. and so I won't spoil anything else, but yeah, they're horse trainers, and something happens, and so the kids take over, and so Otis Jr., OJ, which is kind of, there's a funny scene where one of the white actresses, your name was what again? He's like, OJ. And she's like, and she like backs away because she's like a blonde-haired white woman. It's like, oh, that's OJ's favorite. No, not that OJ. And then his sister M, too.
Yeah, that's
and
not so good.
They run the ranch. Their actual deep relative, the unnamed man in the famous Horse in Motion picture, that was the first moving picture of all time, was their ancestor. And so basically they're on this ranch and something starts to happen. And it's there's my timer too, but there's an unidentified flying object that kind of comes into this, and we don't know what it is. Is it a UFO? Is it something more? And in essence, the family's trying to basically like document it and perhaps survive. Not entirely. I mean, this thing's eating people and taking people up or whatever you want to say it's doing. It's sucking it up or whatever with like dust devils and stuff. So people are just disappearing in this area. And it's a man. Oh, man. Even IMAX film that we're watching that was filmed in IMAX, one of the characters who I know a big fan, I know Yumper is a huge fan of, his name is it Michael Wincott? If you've seen The Crow, he's the bad guy in The Crow that looks like, sounds like he smokes 47 packs a day.
Okay.
And so he plays this old filmmaker that uses a hand cranked IMAX camera to try and capture whatever it is that this thing is. So it's even funnier. There's an IMAX recording in an IMAX recorded film. So I thought that was kind of a funny little claim to thing. But it's a great film. Daniel Kaluuya is brilliant. He's probably one of the finest actors alive today. Kiki Palmer, that plays his sister, she's really good in it too. Both of the two of them together, excellent chemistry. And Steven Yeun, from those of you that are familiar with Walking Dead, Glenn from Walking Dead, he's in it. And he plays an interesting character as well. He's a former child actor. That there's some, well, you'll see in the film, it has something to do with Gordy, the chimpanzee. So a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff. The soundtrack's great, really some good stuff, but well-made film, worth seeing. I told my fiance, who doesn't watch horror films, I believe that she would actually enjoy this film. It's a suspense film, and I love the relationships between the horses. The film is actually broken down into segments based on each individual horse's name. So like Ghost and then Jean Jacket and like all their horse names or whatever. And those tell parts of the story. So it's kind of a really cool, plus you've got this overlying thing about Gordy the Chimp that the whole film starts out with. We meet Gordy the Chimp first. And Gordy, I always wanted a chimpanzee in a diaper as a pet. So Gordy made me think about things a little bit, I guess I'll put it that way. So really good stuff. So it's worth seeing. I would rank it probably either one or two in the trilogy. I didn't like Us as much as I loved Get Out. I think Get Out probably will have, I would probably say Get Out, Nope, and then Us if you were to rank those three. But Jordan Peele is an absolute godsend for the film industry. He is a filmmaker. He is genius. I will say that he is one of the best directors alive. And I would say right now he's probably doing more for, you know, black entertainers in the business that are working on the under what we call below the line, which is all the other jobs, not the writer, not the actors, not the director, but everybody else below the line is your set construction and your craft services. And, you know, all he is specifically bringing below the line jobs to the black community in the entertainment industry and minorities in general, but specifically the black community. He's a real big part of bringing that. Him, Michael B. Jordan, they were all part of this initiative where they're trying to get more of the black community involved in the nuts and bolts of filmmaking, where in the past they were really kind of left out in the dark a little bit. So really good stuff. So worth seeing. I definitely recommend it. I think you'll like it if you go see it. So,
and one, well, I'll add one other thing real quick. For those who haven't heard yet, Jaws is being released in IMAX.
September 2nd, Labor Day weekend. Yep. Mm-hmm. September 2nd, right? September 2nd.
Yep.
So that'll be great. That'll be worth
seeing. So you can guaranteed you will probably see, you will probably hear about me, Yumpers, Vo, and Fids all going to see it, whether it's any combination of us or each individually. Because I will go see it on the big screen for that.
I'd venture I've seen Jaws probably 80 to 90 times at minimum, because I teach it every year to four different classes. So I've been teaching for 12 years. So 12 times four, that's 48 times I've had to teach that just to students, let alone every time it's on, I watch it. Like, I can't stop. Mm-hmm. I love that film. And on IMAX, that would be such an experience. E.T. comes out next month in August in theaters too, by the way, if you guys are big fans of Spielberg's E.T. So that's something coming next month as well. But yeah, that'll be great. So with that said, you know, I was going to tell you guys a little bit about my live music weekend, but I can save that for another time. I'll leave it at this. I got to go see The Shins Friday night. My buddy's band got back together for the first time since 2009 Saturday night. And then I got to see The Lumineers last night. This is, of course, 2 weeks after I got to see the Black Keys right after our last broadcast as well. So a lot of live music. Just bought some Leon Bridges tickets for Friday. So I'm going to see Leon Bridges on Friday. Pretty stoked for that. But I mean, for me, before we dip out of here, I do have to go to an event. But other than that, there's, you know, I keep your eye on the Cubs trade deadline. By the next time, you know, we'll be back in 2 weeks. next time we're back, we'll probably have some decisions that would have been made. We'll know what the trade deadline has netted. We'll actually maybe even have a little bit of these prospects. I have a couple innings logged in, and we'll obviously be pushing a little bit more Bear stuff. So keep your eye on the Bears. And, you know, don't forget to check out Yumper and Swo's movie night. Again, there's 10 tickets left. They're selling hot. Going to be some real goofy people out there. So you'll enjoy the company. So I've got nothing left. Always a pleasure. Thanks for tuning in again. I appreciate you guys. And me and Pete appreciate you joining us. And with that, Pete, why don't you give us your final thoughts and take us on out, bud?
I echo everything you said about thank you for joining us. We are going to try. And, you know, one of the announcements that came out last week was about the road race in Chicago. So we are going to try and get our race ambassador, our, you know, guiding light, our, you know, our Yoda, our philosopher in, you know, our resident philosopher, Yeah Dog, on to try to explain to us the implications of this, because him and Sal have been lighting up my DMs and my Twitter account with race facts about this. And I said, it's not really a race unless they drive through the potholes and have to dodge bullets on the Dan Ryan, but we won't go there. So with that, thank you for joining us. You know, as I've said all along, your time is the most valuable asset you have, and we appreciate and are humbled by you spending some time with us, listening to us. And with all that being said, thank you. Have a great couple weeks. We'll be back in 2 weeks. And Yeah Dog, take it away. Aloha.
I mowed the lawn today, and all I could say is this. I started from the back, and I moved my way all the way to the front. So all you could really say about that is, yeah, dog.